You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the weekend, everybody. This is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's show, I'm joined by Salman Ali, managing editor of Red Nation Hoops. It's a little bit of a quiet period for the Rockets, I would say, in that, yes, we are getting back to basketball after 4 days off, but the Rockets, they're pretty much locked into their playoff seeding, third overall in the West, but there's still some to play for, especially with the MVP race and potentially for the matchup with the Golden State Warriors as well. So first things first, Salman, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back, Ben.
Yeah. Curious your thoughts and if you buy into the notion that I've seen a lot on Twitter that there's a bit of a lull. Because right now, with regards to the Rockets, yes, there's still, 11 games to go. They're 49-22 heading into tonight's game against New Orleans. So yes, there are games left. But when you're locked into your playoff seed, and the Rockets at this point, we all know they're really good. Are you just kind of biding time until the playoffs, or are there still some things that you want to see?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think the Rockets are pretty much biding time. I mean, when they're locked to that third seed, they can't really go up, and they're not going to fall down, even if they go on a small losing streak. I mean, it's really just, right now you're just watching Rockets games for individual performances and really, marquee matchups. I mean, that's why everybody's so excited for this Warriors game, partly because it's obviously the Rockets at Warriors is obviously a very, entertaining matchup, but also because we haven't really had much to look forward to towards the closing stretch of the season. The Rockets, they're pretty far away from that second seed. They can't really climb up, so it's, they don't have much to look forward to. I mean, I guess you want to see Harden lock up his MVP race right now, so that's pretty much what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I'll get to the Warriors in just a couple of minutes. I want to start with the MVP, because I know throughout the year you've been a little more pessimistic than me when it comes to Harden actually winning the award. Now, I think we both think he deserves it, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like I've detected a little bit of a, subtle change in your tone over the last couple of weeks. Maybe it's some of Westbrook's struggles. Maybe it's Harden's, the big game he had against Cleveland. And then, of course, the game winner against the Nuggets earlier this week. But it seems like you're buying in more to the idea that Harden actually can and will win the award. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, and I haven't really said it publicly yet, but I kind of changed my tone. I think Harden's going to win the award, yep. But don't ask me this publicly because, if you ask me, I'm going to deny it. It's a good thing this is a private conversation, so, that's good. I think that a couple of things have swayed me. One, that Washington Post straw poll that Tim Bontemps conducted, where he got 115 random media members and a lot of them were MVP voters. And, Harden was first place by a decent margin in that straw poll. And, the Rockets just kept on winning. And then you saw a lot of, other media members come out with guys that are going to vote. And, and you see these MVP ladders every week. Every week it's updated. USA Today does one. NBA.com does one, and Harden's consistently number one in all these MVP media ladders. And what really had me pessimistic in the beginning is, people were so obsessed with this Russell Westbrook triple-double streak. And what I began to realize is, there's only, a few people that are actually saying that, will only vote for him because of the triple-doubles, and those guys are on TV every day. And that's pretty much why it seems like people are obsessed with it, when in reality, the guys who are voting for this award are, they're play-by-play guys, they're, newspaper guys. I mean, they value the importance of winning. Historically, they've always leaned in a candidate like Harden's direction. And so I'm looking back at it, I'm kind of leaning towards Harden. I think he's going to win it. I kind of think he's a front runner. Of course, that could shift very quickly in the last couple weeks of this season. But yeah, I think he's the front runner.
Yeah, the point that I really kind of took a step back, I had Seth Payne, the morning show host for 610, on last week, and he reminded me of you know, just how small the voting pool actually is. We're talking about 125 to 150, and it's generally a very, very educated pool. I mean, I would say the NBA, even more so than, say, Major League Baseball, the NFL, has by far the most educated award voters, and they take it really seriously. And where I think that plays into Harden and Westbrook, you know, the campaign for Westbrook, now he's having a phenomenal season regardless, but the fixation on the triple-double, really when you think about it, you know, the round numbers, those numbers are for the lazy. Let's just be honest. That's what it is. You have these hot take machines on TV that gravitate towards those numbers. And really, the reason that triple-double is what it is in NBA circles is it's kind of a, you know, a cheap, easy way to say, man, this player had a phenomenal all-around game. Whereas when you look at the voting, you're talking about 125, 150 really well-informed voters that watch the game on a nightly basis. They look more thoroughly than just did so-and-so have a triple-double. They look at, you know, there's all sorts of analytics stats out there. Of course, there's the contributions to winning, as you said. But really, I think, you know, some of these guys that are on TV, the hot take machines, they make it seem like the narrative is more, well, maybe it is pervasive among the general population. But when you look at the actual voters, the folks that are actually following the NBA on a day-in, day-out basis, I think that James should be in really good shape. About the only scenario I could come up with where he could potentially, I don't know if lose it, but at least let Russell Westbrook back in. We know that game on Sunday is going to be highly watched, 2:30 ABC. The Thunder are playing for playoff seeding anywhere between 5th and 7th. To me, if Westbrook has a really good game and the Thunder win, and Harden has a, you know, an off day, that's about the only scenario I can concoct where Westbrook really gets back into it. Is that kind of where you're at?
Yeah, what I've seen in this MVP race, and 2 years ago in that Harden and Steph MVP race, like, these voters really value like head-to-head matchups. And as we saw earlier this season, like, one good head-to-head matchup, like, one moment can shift everything. And, you know, when Kawhi was MVP there for, like, 48 hours, yeah. that was because of that 30-second individual stretch where he hit that pull-up three and then blocked Harden. Like moments like that can really shift an MVP race. Like, that's when Kawhi started to be considered, like, seriously. And, like, if the Rockets blow that game, or if Russ has like a crazy moment, you know, the MVP race could shift in his favor. But like I would hope the voters have a little bit more value in the larger sample size of the whole season. But I mean, that's just the way it is. And you know, like, it's unfortunate because Harden has been much more efficient than Russ this season. And I feel like that's not being talked about enough. He's shooting 60% yes. true shooting, and Russ is shooting 54% true shooting. That's a pretty big gap when you're talking about, you know, the margins in this MVP race. And like, Harden's only like 1.8 rebounds away from averaging a triple double himself. And I feel like that should be considered in, you know, into all of this. So, I mean, like, do you really value 1.8 rebounds over, like, 10 team wins and, like, more efficiency? I mean, that's the choice that voters are going to have to make come voting time.
Yeah, and we go back to the team thing that you mentioned earlier. I've seen some folks on Twitter try and say, well, if Russell Westbrook gets his team back to the 5 spot, because now, you know, they're virtually tied with the Clippers. It's a pretty tight race between the Thunder, the Clippers, and I guess the Grizzlies are still on the fringe of that discussion as well, all the way through 5 through 7. To me, I think the voters are savvy enough, whether the Thunder are 5th or 7th, it doesn't really change the narrative of Westbrook's success relative to Harden. I kind of go back to the Harden-Curry debate from 2 years ago, because back then, you know, the Rockets were the number 2 and Curry was the number 1, but voters noted that the margin between Harden and Curry was like 10-plus games. You know, and right now, you know, it's 8 games between the Thunder and the Rockets, and it very well could be 10 by the end of the year. So, as I see it, maybe I'm assuming too much intelligence, but it kind of goes back into what we were saying earlier about this being a very educated voter field. You know, whether the Thunder are 5th, 6th, or 7th, it shouldn't really matter that much for Westbrook's MVP campaign unless they significantly shrink the gap between themselves and the Rockets. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I mean, the voters who are going to vote for us are going to vote for us regardless. I mean, like that's, I mean, if when we're taking all this into account, like, people are going to vote for us because they want to vote for us. I mean, that's just the way it is. Whether he gets a fifth seat and that validates their vote, I mean, that doesn't really make a difference to me. I just feel like those guys are going to vote Russ anyways because they value the triple-double so much. And that's a cynical way of looking at it, but that's just the way it is. But I mean, I don't think it's going to make a big difference. Like, honestly, like a week ago, if you asked me this, I would have said, yeah, if he got the fifth seed, it might have shifted in Russ's favor. But now I'm more and more, I just think, you know, the gap between the Rockets and the Thunder is just so vast. And, it's really compelling. I mean, if you look at the net rating difference between these two teams, I mean, it's pretty, like, the Thunder are winning these games, like, close, like, that's a big reason why, you know, people are looking at Russ's clutch stats, right?
Yeah.
And the reason Harden's clutch stats aren't that great is because the Rockets have been blowing teams out of the water, and they haven't been in that many clutch situations to begin with for Harden to have a pretty big sample on that. And so, like, yeah, I mean, if you look at the net rating difference between these two teams, it's pretty big. And the reason for that is because, like, you know, the Thunder are barely winning these games, and the Rockets are blowing teams out.
Yeah, I want to turn this to the team discussion a little more. And you mentioned the clutch stats, which is true. Harden doesn't have that many stats, period. The sample is really small because the Rockets just haven't had that many close games. Or it feels like OKC every single night, they're having to grind away just because it's not as good of an overall team. Now, as far as the Rockets, one thing I argued earlier this week after that win against Denver, if you could nitpick one thing with the Rockets throughout this year, it's that for whatever reason, maybe it's just a small sample, but the team's clutch performance has not been that good. But, you know, as we're chatting on this Friday leading up to the Pelicans and the Thunder game this weekend, three of the last five games, the two against the Nuggets and then the Cleveland game last week, the Rockets have executed really well. I don't know if I could say really well, but they've won three games that could have gone either direction in the fourth quarter. So does that make you feel a little bit better about them, you know, as you get into quote-unquote playoff basketball and closer games?
Yeah, and to be honest, Ben, like, I've kind of shifted my thinking on clutch, on just clutch performances in the past few years. Like, before I thought it was an actual thing. Now I think it's a lot of randomness. Like, because if you remember 2 years ago, Harden was really, really good in the clutch. And now he's not so good. And I just think it varies a lot year by year. You can have a really clutch year, and you can have a really bad clutch year. And you know, some superstars make, you know, reputations off being clutch, you know, like Paul Pierce, Joe Johnson. But, like, I mean, in general, like, I really don't think it's an innate thing. Like, I think if you have a superstar in the end of fourth quarter, and the other team has a superstar, and if you can, you know, if you have a good head coach that can draw up a play, and I think the Rockets do have that in Mike D'Antoni, I think the playing field is pretty much equal in most situations. And yeah, I think the Rockets have shown they can win some clutch games in these past few games. But I mean, I'm not worried. Like, I don't think it's like, even if they're really bad in the clutch, I don't think it's a really, you know, big thing. I don't think it's a characteristic thing.
Yeah, and I would generally agree with that. I think you make some good points about, A, the star player, and then secondly, a coach like Mike D'Antoni, because he's shown he can get it done. He's willing to be flexible. We've seen the Rockets win games this year when he's, you know, dialed up a play and they've executed in the half court, and then you have the flip side, which is what happened Monday when he just trusted James Harden to go out and make a play. He didn't call a timeout, which I said I actually loved that call, because if you're down one or two points in the closing seconds, the odds are against you scoring anyway, so you want to increase the variance, which you do by letting Harden go in the full court.
If I could stop you for a second, that's a very new school way of thinking, and sure. I didn't know Mike D'Antoni would, you know, like he's been in the league for a long time, and off the top of my head, I would think he would call a timeout, but I mean, to let his players play like that, I was actually surprised when he did it. Like, and he should get a lot of credit for that. Like, a lot of coaches, you have no idea the amount of coaches that would call a timeout in that situation. Like, if I, yep, off the top of my head, I think Billy Donovan would call a timeout in that situation. I think, you know, like, a lot of, like, Scott Brooks, like, I think a lot, yep, of coaches would call a timeout in that situation.
Yeah, there's a huge tendency to overcoach. You see it a lot during college basketball, actually. I watched a lot of college ball this month because of March Madness, and there's such a tendency to try and be hands-on and just overcoach in those moments. And there's something to be said for, you know, having the flexibility to just let it go. Because, yeah, it's very new school, because you know the odds are against you. If there's 6 or 7 seconds left, I'd imagine any offense in the league, the odds are against you scoring on that possession. So you should probably want to increase the variance as much as you can. Don't give the defense a chance to get set, that sort of thing. So that was a really, encouraging sign to me in terms of Mike D'Antoni. And so, you combine that with James Harden, I don't buy into them not being a clutch team. More so, I just don't really buy into that being a, defining characteristic either way, as you were saying. Also curious, from a team perspective, what your thought is on the matchups. Because you look at, over the next week, you're going to have the one game against the Thunder and then two against the Warriors. Those are two opponents where the, performances have been a little mixed, I would say. Now, the Rockets have won 2 of 3 against Oklahoma City, but every one of them has kind of had the same narrative, which is the Rockets go out and get a lead, but it's been a real struggle offensively in the fourth quarter of those games against Andre Roberson and the kind of defense and rebounding that the Thunder employ. And, of course, with the Warriors, the Rockets did beat them in December, but that game in January, now, caveat has to be noted, that game in January was when the Rockets were just struggling overall as a team. That was in that 8 of 13 losing stretch. So you kind of have to put a little bit of an asterisk on that last Warriors game. But the big picture, these are two teams that the Rockets have had questionable moments against. So do you think that there's something to, learn from these games, that maybe the Rockets can build some confidence, try some new things? Or is it really, just not trying to show your hand before the playoffs?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the Rockets are going to take this matchup very seriously, because it's a pretty likely first round opponent for them. Like, I think right now, if the playoffs started right now, I believe they'd be playing the Thunder in the first round. Last time I checked the standings, it was that way. And so, with that being said, I think they're going to take this matchup pretty seriously. And you made a good point. The Thunder have a propensity to make these games close. They grind the games out. Robertson does a really good job on Harden. He's long, he's athletic, and he causes a lot of problems for not just Harden, but the team in general. And the Thunder have a lot of length, and it gives the Rockets trouble. Like Steven Adams in the middle gives the Rockets a lot of trouble. And I just think that the Thunder, they have a pretty good game plan in slowing the pace down against the Rockets. And when you do that, and Russ has a good game, I just think they always have a chance against the Rockets. So, it's going to make for a fun matchup. I actually really enjoy watching these two teams going at it. And I think when it comes down to it, I still think the Rockets are going to win these games.
Yeah, I still think the matchup is in their favor. It's one that concerns me a little bit more than Memphis. I've been a big proponent of trying to get the Rockets against Memphis. Unfortunately, now there's two games of separation between the Grizzlies and Thunder with only 10 to play. Although I guess the Rockets are able to win that game on Sunday, that would push the margin conceivably back to 1, depending on what Memphis does before then.
They have a tough schedule closing out the year, so doesn't look likely.
I've noticed that. But as you see it, you're not going to, if you're the Rockets, you're not going to punt it. It's a game in which you can actually go out and try some different things. The obvious being, is it Nene, Montrezl Harrell? What are the right matchups? And basically use that as kind of an experimental litmus test for the things you might can do in the first round.
Yeah, I agree. Like Harden does a really good job of, these teams a lot of times, the book on Harden, one of the best ways to defend Harden is to hedge on the pick and roll. And the Thunder have really started doing that these past few games. And I think Harden kind of exploited it in that last play. If you remember when he got the double team off of, I think it was Andre Roberson and I think Russ's man, or I think it was Russ himself. And then Nene cut, and he found Nene open for an easy dunk. And then Nene got fouled and made the two free throws. Harden's found a way to combat that hedge defense, and I think he's more than capable of exploiting this defense and other defenses going forward. I think Harden's figured that defense out.
That's good to hear. Yeah, I think Harden's definitely turned a corner against them. I think the bigger questions are what you do up front, as we were saying, Nene versus Montrezl Harrell. Also, at the power forward spot, this is a team, when they throw out Steven Adams, Cantor, all those bigs. Can Sam Decker hold his own, or do you have to be a little more innovative at the four spot? And of course, we haven't actually seen a Thunder-Houston matchup with Lou Williams. So potentially, when you look down the stretch in the fourth quarter of when the Rockets' offense got sticky, potentially having another guy like Lou Williams to kind of alleviate the playmaking burden, that can potentially help you as well. And this will be the first time that he's played in a Rockets Thunder game.
Yeah. And I'm curious if Rhino can have a good game against the Thunder. I know he's had some struggles against that team, but if he can have a good game and the Rockets are clicking with all their shooters, I think it favors the Rockets a lot, because the Thunder give Rhino a lot of trouble down low, yeah. Ryan Anderson. And if he can manage sustained games with the Thunder, because like at the end of games, Mike D'Antoni has to sub him out because he's just struggled so much against that team. If he can manage to stay in the game, that's a big difference maker for the Rockets in their favor.
Yeah, I think so as well, because when he's not in and you either have to go super small or you're trying to, you know, see if Sam Decker and right now just his broken jump shot, let's just call it what it is, it gets tough. If you can have Ryan Anderson and his body out there, you know, if he's fully capable of playing and staying on the floor, maybe not to actually close out the game, but at least play 30 solid, meaningful minutes, then I think that would go a long way in that matchup. Closing out the podcast, I want to talk about the other matchup real quick, which is the Warriors. You're going to have two games against them next week. We already touched on it earlier, but it's kind of unlikely for the Rockets. They're not going to rest. I think we know that by now. The only chance that you might see the Rockets rest some guys is when they've actually clinched that 3-seed the last week or so. We know the Rockets, they look forward to those games, and, well, at the NBA level, it's not like there's really a way to be vanilla anyway. You know, this isn't the NFL where you might not call certain plays. The NBA, you're just going out there and playing. So I think the Rockets are certainly going to play to win those two games against Golden State, and without Kevin Durant, in theory, it's a good opportunity to kind of get one of those signature confidence-boosting wins. So taking Durant out of the mix, what are the things that went wrong for the Rockets the last game against Golden State, and what are the matchups where, you know, the X factors, so to speak, where they could potentially get a win?
Yeah, so the first time the Rockets played the Warriors is kind of when the Warriors were still figuring themselves out as a team. And but the second time is kind of when everything finally clicked for the Thunder, for the Warriors, and they were on a roll, and Thunder and Durant was on a roll, and he was having these amazing defensive performances. He was doing a really good job of helping on the rim protection, and I think that caused the Rockets a lot of trouble. And I think this time with the, you know, we talked about this in the last podcast I was on with you. You know, with Durant out or not 100%, like, that gives the Rockets a little bit of a chance, right? And that's what makes this matchup really fun, right? The Rockets are the clear underdogs in this matchup, and I think it's a lot more fun, like, being the underdog team and having that variance of shooting a lot of three pointers, and perhaps you get hot and, you know, win a game against the Thunder, and that's kind of what the Rockets have to hope for. Like, and I think there's a pretty good chance. Like, right now, if I were to put a number on it, I'd say there's a 40% chance the Rockets win a series against the Thunder. Not a 40%, like
the Warriors,
35%. Yeah, against the Warriors. And, you know, like, I think you just really have to, like, you have to understand that you're the underdog going into it, and, you know, just scheme for that team. And I think the Rockets can make it work.
Yeah, and I think the other part of it is mental. When you're going up against a team that's supposed to be this good, and it's the team, of course, that's knocked you out of the playoffs the last 2 years, half the battle is truly believing. So we've made the optimistic case before with Durant out, and even when he returns, is he going to be 100%? There's a clear avenue for the Rockets. But there's something to be gained, because a lot of games, the Warriors have the opponent beaten before the tip, because there's just sort of a waiting for the other shoe to drop feel. Whereas the Rockets, they've beaten the Warriors once, although it was back in early December. If you can go out and get one of these games, or at least hang very competitive, yeah, I think there's a certain psychological benefit to that. Whereas, and of course I don't expect it to happen, but, you know, if you go out and get drilled by 20, just as you were in January, then maybe you have to wonder if there's a little bit of, well, you know, to use the Pedro Martinez expression, these guys are my daddy, that sort of thing. And I don't expect that to happen at all. I think the Rockets, you know, it's a very confident, mentally tough bunch. So I'm not anticipating that being a scenario. But, yeah, I do think...
And the Warriors don't have an answer for James Harden yet. That's very key here, right? Because, like, Harden torches the Warriors pretty much every single time he plays them. And that's an advantage in the Rockets' favor. Like when you don't have to worry about James Harden and you only have to worry about everybody else, I mean... That's a huge stress.
Go ahead. But Klay Thompson's the best two-way player in the NBA, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the days, man.
Yeah, yeah. And normally the Warriors try throwing a whole bunch of different bodies at Harden, and it just doesn't work. Like, they try Iguodala, they try Klay Thompson, they try Livingston, and, you know, Harden just, he can torch them. And, like, they have no answer for them. So, I mean, really, you just have to worry about your shooters being hot, right? Like,
yeah.
That's what you really have to depend on that night. Can your guys make shots? And if you can make shots, I think you have a chance.
Yeah. And by the way, to close out this podcast, I have to rant anytime I bring up that two-way stuff. If there's one benefit to this season, I am so glad that NBA Twitter finally seems to be dropping, not entirely, but dropping that two-way stuff, because nothing drives me crazier than this whole notion of, you know, valuing players through two-way, because really, there's just a total value, and so how you get there, now Harden has been better defensively this season, but how you get there, you know, you can be 90% offense, 10% defense, you can be the reverse in the case of someone like Ben Wallace 10 years ago, but, I mean, the players are just worth the overall value of their contributions, so to just arbitrarily do this 50-50 game and act like, well, we have to have this perfect balance. I mean, quite frankly, the two-way talk reminds me of the, you know, the triple-double fixation, and that it's just some kind of artificial construct from people that are kind of wanting to use it to their own bias. You know what I mean? It's not
yeah,
like...
I hate the word two-way player. Like,
yeah.
There's nobody that hates that word, because implicitly what you're saying is that defense is more valuable than offense. And that's just not true. Like, the best offensive player is going to beat the best defensive player any day of the week, right? Like, you'd rather have Steph Curry than Andre Robertson. Like, that's just the case, right? Like, it's so stupid what we do with this two-way player thing.
It's in the concept of a team sport. And you can always mitigate your weakest defender, whereas you can't just come up with an elite offensive player like Steph Curry or James Harden. You know, it just doesn't work that way. There are ways to hide or at least mitigate a defensive impact in the team construct, but you can't build a true number one option. It's just silly, the fixation. Like I said, it's just like the triple-double. It's just some kind of, you know, broad, all-encompassing term that people use. You know, they try to make it seem sophisticated, but the reality is that they just happen to have a favorite player that kind of fits that loose definition, so then they twist the meaning of it the same way that you're seeing a lot of folks do with the triple-double and Russell Westbrook's case this year. Solomon, thank you so much for the time, man. Before you go, throw out your Twitter handle, your website, basically everything you're working on as the Rockets close out this season.
Yeah, my website's rednationhoops.com, Twitter handle @rednationhoops, and we're working on a pretty cool series. As you know, the Rockets are in contention for a lot of awards this season, so we're ending out the season with a series of columns basically making a case for every award. We just came out with an Executive of the Year column for Daryl Morey. I think you guys should go check that out. It's by George Flores. He did a good job with it. And we're going to come out with a whole bunch of other columns week by week toward the end of the season. It's pretty exciting.
Yep, I read that one from George. It's a pretty good read about Daryl Morey. Anyway, that's rednationhoops.com. That's Solomon Ali, managing editor. Thanks so much for the time, bud.
No problem, man.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. Always love catching up with Solomon because he's a really good big picture guy. I think we see the game the same way. And yeah, good to know that I was not mistaken. I did kind of detect a subtle change in his tone over the past couple of weeks with Harden's MVP candidacy, to where it seems almost a lock that it's going to happen. And well, that game Sunday against the Thunder is a chance to move it from almost a lock to truly a lock, in my opinion, if the Rockets go out and win that game and if Harden plays well. But first things first, they do have a game tonight against the New Orleans Pelicans. I know they're up 6 games with 11 to play, but nothing's done until it's done. The Rockets, over the next week, will have an opportunity, all of these games, to hopefully put a hammer lock on the 3 seed and salt it away so that, well, if they want to rest in the last week or two before the playoffs, they certainly can do that. Whatever they do, though, we will have you covered here at Locked On Rockets every day, just as we've been doing, well, since last July. So I thank you guys for sticking around with us. And if you stick with us in the weeks ahead, we're going to have a lot more coverage of, well, locking up the 3 seed. And then, of course, what we hope is a very long and extended playoff run starting in mid-April. This is Locked On Rockets, your only daily podcast covering the Rockets. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. I'm Ben Dubose, your host. Follow me at Ben Dubose. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Any questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, we'd love to help you out. Also, if you haven't already subscribed to us, you can do so. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Audioboom. Just search for Locked On Rockets, and you can find any of our 160-some-odd shows. You can also find, well, a lot of other content around the NBA and the NFL, where we have a daily podcast for every team and one covering the league as a whole. In Houston, that means we also have a Locked On Texans podcast hosted by my buddy Robert Land. If you haven't checked that out yet, I strongly encourage you to do so. It's produced by the same Locked On Podcast Network. Anyway, I'll go and get ready for tonight's game. Again, it is going to be a fairly lengthy homestand for the Rockets with the Pelicans, Thunder, and Warriors over the next 5 days. Hope to see some of you guys out there at Toyota Center. For now, I'll sign off. Hope you guys have a great weekend and look forward to talking with you more after the games.